authored.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the opportunity to come before the committee today to talk about House File 1125. It is essentially a fairly simple bill that simply appropriates $500,000 in fiscal 16 to our small business development centers that are located across the state that do incredibly good work with a relatively small amount of money. And Mr. Chair, if it pleases you, I would just like to turn it over to my testifier and introduce Ms. Sandy Larson, who is the program manager of the Northeastern Small Business Development Center.
Welcome to our committee. Give your name for the record.
Thank you. Yes, my name is Sandy Larson. I'm with the UMD Center for Economic Development, Northeast Minnesota's Small Business Development Center. Thank you for an opportunity to talk to your committee today. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I have been with the Minnesota SBDC for 9 years. I am also active on the leadership team for the statewide Minnesota SBDC program. The SBDCs serve in all of your district, and today I provided an annual report in your materials from 2013. And this material has information for each region. On the back, you'll notice there's a map so you can identify which region you fall into. This shows the impact of in each region that we work with on businesses, and it also has success stories, real business owners who have benefited from the services of the Minnesota SBDC. We are truly a partnership program, and we receive $1.8 million appropriated by Congress each year from the SBA for Minnesota. That amount is required to have match. And from the state of Minnesota, the money that we receive, just $150,000 is passed on for technical services and assistance through the regional programs. The rest of the allocated funds go to our state office, which is housed in DEED, the Department of Employment and Economic Development. Most of our match in the regions comes from our host institutions, colleges and universities, the communities, counties, foundations, and other nonprofits throughout the state. Now, for the Minnesota SBDC is really known for its effective regional programs. Independent studies show on a nationwide level that 80% of businesses fail within the first 5 years. Now, people who seek out the service of an SBDC, it's shown that only that 65% of the businesses who use our services actually succeed. They manage to stay in business after 5 years. That's on a nationwide level. Recently, our South Central SBDC did a study, and they did research asking the businesses that they've worked with 5 years ago, checking to see if they back to see if they were still in business, and they found that 92% of businesses in the South Central region are still in business. And I dare say, when the rest of us do that similar study, I think we will find that Minnesota has a very good rate on success for people who work with SBDCs. In 2014, we assisted 228 entrepreneurs in starting their businesses. And that's just a small portion of the clientele that we work with. We also worked with 3,100 businesses who are already existing. So, with existing businesses, we really focus on stabilization of those businesses and expansion. We provide the technical services and consulting, but we also have other programs that we're always seeking funding for so that we can expand and grow to serve our clients and small businesses in the entire state even further. Some of the initiatives that we have been able to either expand or implement, thanks to the allocation that was given last year, are our economic gardening program. In Northeast Minnesota, we did a pilot project on economic gardening, and it went very well. With more funds, we would like to continue that program in Northeast Minnesota, and other regions want to also begin an economic gardening program. We also recognize the importance of working with veterans. Right now, again, in Northeast Minnesota, we're working with a service-disabled veteran who has an invention that he is looking to commercialize and bring to market. We need more services to be able to reach veterans like him. For women-owned businesses, in 2014, we worked with 1,238 women to either start or grow their business. One woman came into our office recently after obtaining a loan that we assisted her with and said, I don't know how people start businesses without the help of the SBDC. And that was a really strong reminder to us of why we do what we do. We also look to work with minority and disadvantaged businesses. Again, in Northeast and Northwest Minnesota, we've been working with the Minnesota Indian Business Alliance to offer a specific training to Native American business owners on the Buy Indian Act. We are also working to hold a train the trainer session for those of us who work with Native Americans on how to navigate the government procurement system for the Buy Indian Act. Youth entrepreneurship is another area that we look to reach out to grow our entrepreneurship. Several regions either have programs or are working to start programs. Again, special funding is needed to be able to do that. In Northeast region, we have a camp, a UMD Teen Enterprise, that we started in 2012. Since that time, we've also had South Central is working on a program right now in Mankato, trying to bring about a youth entrepreneurship program. And the Central region has also started a youth entrepreneurship program with the dollars, again, that we received with the last allocation. Exports are very important, have received a lot of attention from the state, and export initiatives are another area that the SBDC works on. Being in the Northeast region and the Northwest region, we have two of the top regions that are providing export assistance to our clients in the Minnesota SBDC. There's been talk of trade centers being developed, and with added funding, we could look to start a trade center in that area, pilot program that could potentially go on to the state. And finally, broadband initiatives are another area that's been of great interest to the state. We have a technology consultant in Northeast and Northwest Minnesota working with the Broadband 2020 in the Northeast and the Northwest Impact 2020. These initiatives increase technology use to businesses. So these are different funding opportunities that we have either started recently because of the additional funds through the state legislature last year, or funds that we've been able to seek out from other opportunities. But an allocation of $500,000 to the Minnesota SBDC network would allow us to continue the progress we've made with the allocations received last year. Programs that were expanded can continue on a current level, and initiatives that were piloted, such as the Northeast Economic Gardening Program and the Youth Entrepreneurship Programs, can be implemented on a broader scale, helping more businesses and entrepreneurs. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for your time and consideration. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Well, thank you. It's my understanding, I think I learned this from Representative Mahoney, who was instrumental in getting the money last year, that we give an increase and the federal government matches that. Is that correct?
Can you repeat that, Mr. Chairman?
If we give an increase in funding from the state level, the federal government matches part of that or all of that, is that correct?
No, that's not correct, Mr. Chairman. The SBDC funds come, the Congress allocates a certain amount to Minnesota, and okay. So an increase in the state funding would not allow for an increase in SBA funding.
Okay. With that, do you have anything to say, Representative Simon?
Mr. Chair, again, I just appreciate the time. And just to clarify, I think your question was a good one, but I think it does say in the bill even that these funds that are made available can be used to match the funds under the SBA. So in a way, they're related and they're useful. And I think if members look at the map in their packet, that they'll see that this is, you know, a statewide, and it's a really good initiative. And happy to have your name on the bill, Mr. Chair.
And I'm happy to have it there. Any questions from the membership? Any questions from the audience? Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And no questions, just a quick comment in support of this bill. This was a bill that I had actually carried last session, and I think it's really been instrumental to getting these resources, getting this technical assistance out to every corner of the state, really, and helping these small businesses go from that ground level conceptual idea into operation. So this is a good bill, great program. I hope we can support it. Thank you.
Seeing no other questions, I will renew my motion to have House File 1125 to be passed and sent on to Jobs. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion carries. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you.
Clark Johnson, is he here? Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gunther.
I will move House File 1149 to be passed and sent on to Jobs.
Okay.
So House File 1149 appropriates $375,000 each year of the biennium to fund a very successful growth acceleration program through Enterprise Minnesota. Enterprise Minnesota consults with Minnesota manufacturing companies throughout the state each year to help them compete and grow profitably. And I really like to point out that not only compete here in Minnesota, but in the United States, but compete globally by having things like lean manufacturing be part of their business. And with that, it is my pleasure to have our next testify, Mr. Kill.
Hey, would you state your name for the record, please?
My name is Bob Kill. I'm the President and CEO of Enterprise Minnesota. And good afternoon, Chairman and members of the committee. As Representative Gunther said, we are a nonprofit organization that works with small and mid-sized manufacturers around the state of Minnesota. 45%, or almost half, of the manufacturers are outside of the seven-county metro area, and in many cases are the lifeblood of communities. I'm very pleased to be with you today to ask for continued support of this growth acceleration program, or as many of the veterans in the room know it as GAP, with strong bipartisan support over the years since 2007 when it was conceived. We are seeking a state investment of $1.5 million of ongoing general fund dollars to reauthorize GAP for the 2016-2017 biennium. GAP is a very rigorous program. To qualify, manufacturers need to have a solid business generating profits and growth. And this consulting services that we provide requires skin in the game from them. They must match for every $1, a dollar. For to get a dollar of GAP investment, they must match with one of their own dollars. In a handout that you'll have later, it points out that 5,200 of the 7,400 manufacturers in the state are below 20 employees. Those employees in those small companies could not have the services they need to really develop and grow without the resources of Enterprise Minnesota and the Growth Acceleration Program. Since inception in 2007, GAP has benefited 246 Minnesota manufacturing companies. 178 of those are in greater Minnesota. But it is a statewide program, and any manufacturing company under that 100 employees or 250 employees can benefit. With the tie to the Department of Commerce, all of our manufacturers will complete a confidential survey upon completion of the services, and we average a 30-to-1 return on every dollar of GAP spent. I thank you in advance for your support, and I'd like to bring forward two business owners from across the state, manufacturers who have utilized GAP in the past, and they can tell briefly the benefit it's brought to their organization. First is Joel Wittenbrocker from MacTech in Red Wing.
Thank you for the opportunity to meet today. My business is called MacTech in Red Wing, Minnesota.
Mr. Wittenbrocker, would you please state your name for the
record? I'm
sorry?
Joel Wittenbrocker. My firm is MacTech from Red Wing, Minnesota. My history with Gap and with Enterprise Minnesota goes back to the mid to late 2005-2007 time frame, at which time we first utilized their services to do some planning initiatives. At that time, our business was about 36 employees. Today, we've utilized EM approximately 10 or 11 times for various consulting, including international marketing, direct marketing, lean manufacturing, value stream mapping of our organization. Today, we're about 55 employees in Red Wing and about 90 to 95 across the country and have expanded internationally. And I would say that it is a key component has been the utilization of Enterprise Minnesota Consulting Services, and the key catalyst that got us going, and it continues to be so, was the gap funding that really is a get you over the line and or in difficult economic times when you just can't quite afford to take that step. And I would say the numbers that Bob quoted, which is something like a 30-to-1 return on the money spent, in my mind is a phenomenal number, and our company has met or exceeded those in every one of our practices that we took up with the program. I'm truly honored also that a year and a half ago Bob asked me to sit on the board of Enterprise Minnesota, so it is a cause that I am passionate about and I believe in strongly, and I truly appreciate the opportunity to visit with you today.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you started with 35 employees, and you said you went to 55 in today's world with 90 spread across the country. Is that 90 on top of the 55
no,
employees?
No, it's 90 overall.
90 overall. So you had a two-thirds growth or 200% growth in your company?
We had, that's not quite accurate. I think
you could have said yes.
Yeah. we've had substantial growth. We've gone from mid-30s to mid-50s, and then we've opened two more offices across the country, and it's all driven off of here. Thank you.
Are there any other questions for this testifier? Okay. Mr. Jensen. And would you please state your name and who you represent? Sir.
Certainly. Mike Jensen. I'm with Gauthier Industries, G-A-U-T-H-I-E-R, Rochester, Minnesota. Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you very much for having me today. I appreciate the opportunity to speak on the Growth Assistance Plan, what it's meant to our company over the years. Since 2007, when I took over ownership in the company, we saw the need to reinvest in the company. We saw the need to grow our business. And at that time, we worked with Enterprise Minnesota and started working on the first program of many that helped us streamline our processes and reduce our lead times. Our lead times at the time were 4 to 6 weeks for delivery to our customers. Today, we are 2 weeks to our customers because we did the lean manufacturing, we did the value stream mapping, and we really focused on that whole process. And that was just the beginning of our growth pattern. Back in 2008, we were at 75 employees. Today, we're at 99 employees. Couple of the programs besides Lean that we went through were training within industry to give our supervisors the tools to be able to retain our employees, to be able to be good leaders. I can say that today our employee retention is 13 years at our company. That's the average tenure of employment. We also went through strategy management, and that was creating our mission and vision and creating our roadmap and accomplishing the goals along the way to create success. And the last one that we went through was marketing strategy, to be able to work with our sales reps throughout the country and expand our customer base and look at leads and ways that we can bring manufacturing more business back to Minnesota. So that's contributed to our employee growth. So in conclusion, I'd like to thank Mr. Chair and then also all the members for considering the Growth Assistance Plan. It's been very valuable to our company. I hope we can continue it, and with your help, that would be very much appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jensen. Is there any questions for this testifier? If not, Representative Gunther.
Thank you, members. I think this program has proven its worth. I think it definitely deserves to be continued, and I would appreciate your vote.
So Representative Gunther renews his motion to pass and refer House File 1149 to Jobs. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Representative Gunther, you have another bill, House File 807?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chairman. I would like to move House File 807 to pass and be sent to Jobs. And House File 807 appropriates $8 million in fiscal year 2016 and $8 million in fiscal year 2017 to deed redevelopment grant programs. The redevelopment grant program is a statewide program that helps us assist local communities with the redevelopment projects by filling the financial gap that often prevents recycling land into more productive uses. The redevelopment funds have been a catalyst for business development for many Minnesota companies. In regard to the brownfield portion of the bill, Representative Mahoney has a bill up today to pertain to brownfield revitalization grants. So I leave it up to him to present that bill. But right now, we have Meredith Udoybach to talk about the redevelopment grant funding.
Thank you. Would you please state your name and who you're with for the record?
My name is Meredith Udoybach, and I'm the director of the Office of Brownfields and Redevelopment at the Department of Employment and Economic Development. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the redevelopment grant program has been around since 1998. It is a 50% grant program. The funds are used to help revitalize sites that are most often abandoned or underutilized, already developed sites where the tax base is not generating a lot of tax, and usually they're abandoned facilities, so there's no jobs. The purpose of the funds is to most often demolish structures and prepare these sites so that they then can be redeveloped. The main purpose when it was created in 98 was to help alleviate some of the sprawl that was occurring. And most of the sites in the metro area are infill sites. We know that most of the metro area is landlocked, so it's very important to the metro sites to help with that. And in greater Minnesota, these are also equally important funds. Most of these facilities we hear are often at the gateway to the community and the blight you see when you come into town. So the program has been very successful in helping to revitalize these sites and allow for business development to occur on them. The funds by statute are given out 50% to greater Minnesota and 50% to the metro area. And I believe I saw a handout today on the program, and there's a little pie chart on the side. It was this one that was out in the hallway. And you'll see that the funds by project as well as by funds are pretty much given out on that same 50-50 basis. This truly is a program that has an equal need in the metro area as well as in greater Minnesota. So we've been very happy to be able to spread our funds out statewide. To date, we've awarded 161 grants through this program. About $63 million have been awarded, and I can tell you of that amount, close to $27 million has gone to greater Minnesota, and about $36 million has gone to the metro. But you'll see on the pie charts on the handout that the dollar amount for the projects are a bit higher in the metro area, but when you look at the number of projects that we've awarded, we've actually given out more project dollars in greater Minnesota than in the metro area, and I think it's just a differential between the cost of some of those projects. To date, we've redeveloped over 1,200 acres. We've created over 24,000 jobs on these sites. We've increased the tax base by over $34 million on all of these sites. And the non-state investment that we're able to leverage has been over $2 billion on these sites. It's been very successful. We are usually oversubscribed. We run grant cycles every twice a year, and we almost always see the projects being oversubscribed, so the program has been very successful and very much needed since its inception in 1998.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Gunther.
I think it's a very good program. I appreciate your vote. I think programs like this and the Brownfield program we're going to have next or pretty soon is very, very important. And so I would renew my motion to have House File 807 pass and be sent to jobs.
Representative Gunther renews his motion to pass 807 and send on to jobs. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Next, we will have House File 1386, Center for Rural Policy and Development. Welcome to our committee, Mr. Johnson, Representative Johnson.
Well, thank you, Representative Gunther. I appreciate being sitting before this committee. I respect what you do, and I just shared with my testifier that this is my favorite committee that I'm not on. So.
Yeah.
Bob knows that. Does this require a motion? Or?
I will move House File 1386 to pass and be sent to jobs.
Okay. Thank you. I just it's kind of an honor to bring this bill forward in support of the Center for Rural Policy and Development. I'll just open it with a story about how I was actually involved indirectly in the inception of this very important group of folks in southern Minnesota. And when I worked in I work at Minnesota State University of Mankato, and I was working in the dean's office, and my dean at that time, Bill Webster, really saw this as the idea of understanding and studying and focusing on rural policy and rural development issues, and coming at that from a scholarly view would benefit Minnesota. And so that it kind of got birthed to some degree at Minnesota State. Didn't stay there because there were space issues. They didn't have a spot, and then it moved on to St. Peter. But I'm glad to come before you with a bill that would finally provide some renewed funding for this important center, and I'll let Brad Finstead, the president of the organization, Representative Brad Finstead, explain the value of the center.
Welcome to our committee. Give your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Excuse me, Brad Finstead. I'm the president of the Center for Rural Policy and Development. I'd like to thank Representative Johnson for carrying this bill. Excuse me. So we have a long history with the legislature starting back in 1997. And as I look around this room, there's a few of you that were involved. Actually, not too many. Representative Gunther, you were probably one of them. And Representative Mahoney, I believe, possibly. So 1997. There was a bipartisan coalition of legislators and nonprofits from all over the state that got together to really try to put more of a focus on rural policy and look at policy issues from a rural perspective. At that time, there was a need for us to more globally look at things beyond boundaries and beyond regions. So in 1997, there was a bill introduced by Representative Doug Peterson, who is now the president of the Minnesota Farmers Union. Representative Gunther was a co-author, and Senator Vickerman in the Senate. And there was a bill to create the Center for Rural Policy and Development. A partnership was created with the state of Minnesota to receive matching funds through foundations, and that was the birth of the center. Early on, our work focused heavily on broadband issues, internet usage. We really were a pioneer on that issue, and we've moved on to do a lot of great things. A little bit of our structure, you'll see in your handouts, we have a statutorily defined board that the governor of the state of Minnesota gets to appoint. Very diverse, both via background and regions. In your handout, you'll see that the northwest part of the state is underrepresented right now, and we've actually had two board members retire from that area. So I'll put in a plug for any of you that know folks up there that would be good to serve on our board. We can work with the governor's office on that. But we have a very unique makeup of our board, and again, the governor appoints that. We also have one appointee from the House Speaker and one from the Majority Leader in the Senate. So over the years, we've had the privilege to have members as Representative Gunther, Cornish, Reinhart, Sertich, Wenzel, Shoemaker, Senators Beckman, Sparks, Magnus, Jensen. So they're the folks that have served on our board. We we take a look, you know, structurally, we look at policy from a rural perspective. So I tell people we put on the rural policy lens every day. And we were here a few weeks ago to testify in front of you and talk a little bit about the demographic trends. At that time, I gave you a handout. I recycled it and gave it again to give you a overview of the work that we've done in the last 18 months tackling issues of rail, the overall state of rural Minnesota, the state of our roads, state of water, and I'll just put a plug in that we're doing this right now with two staff, myself and our research director, and then we utilize grad students from both Gustavus and Mankato State. Was it Minnesota State University of Minnesota? What is it? Minnesota State University of Mankato, the Mavericks. So we still have that partnership or that tie with that institution. You'll also see that our focus over the last 18 months has really gone beyond just pointing out rural policy issues, but also how that intertwines or ties the state together. So we like to say a strong rural and a strong urban Minnesota create a very vibrant Minnesota. So our research starts to reflect more of not so much what separates us, but what are some issues that really cross boundaries, cross counties, and things that rural and urban folks alike can work on. And then I'll close with just a quick historical perspective of our funding. So in 1997, when we were in the enabling legislation, there were some lofty goals. The original proposal had a one-time funding proposal of $10 million to be put into an endowment fund to create a legacy. As you all know, there's politics and there's negotiation, and that ended up at $2 million. So we were originally funded at $2 million in a one-time endowment fund and then $500,000 a year for operating. Fast forward through the early stages in early 2000s with the roller coaster economy and the budget deficits, we lost the $2 million in an allotment by Governor Pawlenty at the time, and then we've kind of roller coastered up and down since then. So you have that chart in front of you. I guess I would just like to add that every dollar we received from the state, we've matched with private donations through basically the foundations, and we're very appreciative of them. McKnight, Blandin, Bremer, and the Bush Foundation have been strong supporters of our organization. So we thank Representative Johnson and thank you all as the committee for considering this proposal.
Thank you. Any questions from members? Any questions from the audience? For or against the bill? Seeing none, I will renew my motion to have House File 1136 passed. Be sent. Are you sure? No.
Yeah.
Okay, 1386 passed and be sent to Jobs. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Pass. Thank you. And next is Representative Mahoney.
Relatively quickly today, Mr. Chair.
Very cranking them out.
Sliding on through here. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'd like to move House File 1175 to be considered and passed to the Jobs Finance Committee.
Very well.
Mr. Chair, you had a bill a little earlier today that dealt with brownfields. I'm having staff pages pass out a picture and a bit more information about brownfield and environmental restoration loans. And hopefully while that's going on, I have an amendment, the DE2 amendment. We'll get that in so I can get it in the shape that it needs to be in.
Very well. Is this an oral amendment or?
There is an oral amendment to the DE2. I will make that. I can make that now or after we adopt the amendment.
Okay. You want to make the DE2 amendment the way you want to with your oral amendment?
I can, first. Mr. Chair. On, excuse me, on page 1, line 8, the underlined 116J.650 needs to be changed to delete that and insert 116J. I want to make sure I get this right. 560. Essentially, okay. It was a typo when they typed it up.
All in favor of that oral amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Say nay. Okay, you got the amendment the way you want to be.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the DE2 amendment.
Very well.
Mr. Chair, the DE2 amendment does a number of different things. And I'm going to go to page 4, line 23. What this bill does is create a fund of $6 million in 16 and $6 million in 17, splitting it equally between Greater Minnesota and Urban Minnesota. And as you can see from what I handed out, there, not the first page, but I guess it's the last page, there's a lot of them out there. There's a lot of brownfields out in our state. So I will skip from just the dollar figures to page 3, line 17, which adds some language to this subdivision, to this section of the law. When this program was started, it was, and this is a fault of the legislature. We have gotten risk averse, very, very risk averse, and we have expected our departments to have 100% success rate. When this was first started back in the 90s, there was the ability for the department to take a bit of a risk and say, you know, small town Minnesota, you have this brownfield as it enters into your town. You should clean that up and then try and get it a whatever, whether it's a gas station or a dollar store or a department store or hardware store on that site. Because today what happens is we tell the department that they have to have a development in line before, that's the highest ranking. So what happens is that either it's a company that is well established, or it's a housing unit that can spend time waiting, it's a housing redevelopment, which it can spend time waiting for the site to come here, go through the whole process, get cleaned up, and then go back to the permitting process. So what Section 8 of this bill does is adds in the language, and I'm just going to be specific on 3.21, without regard to whether development is expected or planned for the site at the time of the grant application. I'm trying to get this back to where it used to be. Because as you see with all these, what you don't see, and I didn't have this one printed up. This is my district. My district is about 48 blocks across. And all these little dots that you see are brownfields. And you can go to the MPCA and you can ask them for your own district. And you will be shocked. And it's not just urban Minnesota. This goes across the state, as this particular map shows. We have several thousand brownfields across the state, probably closer to 10,000. So members, that's what this does, is it's trying to get the department to get back to where it used to be before we put so many restrictions on them that they could not, that they were smart to say, we want to have developments in line. We need to clean these sites up. We need to give places that are in our small towns or any place else the opportunity for our small towns to sell this, or for our urban areas. And as you can see from that picture, I have a lot of them in my district. A lot of them are the gas station down the street, the mini mart. It is a polluted site, and it's got a gas station on it. We're not going to clean that one up. But the one on the other side of the railroad tracks between the apartment building and the railroad tracks that could have housing on it or could have a business on it, that would be one that you'd want to clean up. I'll stand for questions, Mr. Chair.
So you're going to create economic development?
That's what we try to do in this committee and many others.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For House staff, the definition of the metro area under Section 473.121 Subdivision 2, is that just 7 County Metro? Thank you.
Okay. I'm happy to expand the metro area. Always have been.
We do 11 counties for redistricting, so.
I'm good with 11 counties. I think we should.
I just want to remind Representative Garofalo, there's a farm field behind his house. is there any questions from the membership?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I just want to remind you I have a truck farm about a half a mile from my house. It goes down to the... And the sad thing is that people don't realize is that many of these small urban lots and just small lots, no one has done the testing to see if that's actually a brownfield.
That's a good point. Any other questions from members? Any questions for or against this bill from the audience? Seeing none, Representative Mahoney, would you like to renew your motion?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew my motion that House File 1175, as amended, be passed and sent to the Energy and Jobs Committee. So there's got to be an acronym for that, isn't there?
No.
We'll figure out. With that, all in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. Matt?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Peterson, House File 1515. Where's that? Welcome to our committee.
Thank you very much.
I will move House File 1515 to be referred to Agricultural Finance. Would you please present your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's great to be in your committee. A lot of good-looking people here. I am here to present a bill that could potentially affect over the 100,000 Somalian Americans that currently live in the state of Minnesota. And as you may have heard, with the recent ISIS issues of recruiting targeted Minnesotans, this bill really comes to address some of those concerns. And CAJOG happens to be an organization that works with Somalian Americans that has been in the state of Minnesota working with our youth since 2007. And this bill will bring workforce development not only to the metro area but also to greater Minnesota. And also there is a STEAM component with the University of Minnesota through their 4-H program. And I also have a testifier today to also discuss a little bit more of the detail of the bill.
Very well. Welcome to our committee. Give your name for the record, please.
Mohammed Farah.
Will you go ahead and start explaining this bill?
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Mohammed Farah. I am the executive director of CAJOG, an internally known Somali youth organization based here in Minnesota. On behalf of the Somali Minnesota youth and all Minnesotans, I urge you to support House File 1515. In 2007, after seeing more than a dozen of Minnesota youth recruited by Al-Shabaab, gang violence taking place, high school dropout on the rise, a group of Somali youth came together with an idea and a vision to build a strong support network and defend themselves against radicalization and the negative influences, and that's how CAJOG got its start. CAJOG is a Somali term, and it means to stay away and stay out, and the message behind that is to get young people away from all negative influences, including the recruitment of Al-Shabaab and ISIS, by getting them engaged in the education and the arts. I would like to highlight a few of our programs which have reached thousands of young people over the years. Our FUNCA Invisible Art Program is a cultural heritage and arts combined program. This is a program where young people are learning about their culture and heritage, and at the same time using the arts as a means, as a tool of engagement, encourage young people and provide opportunities for intercultural dialogue. Our Be at School program is a truancy program focused on increasing school attendance and addressing early warning signs in Somali youth. And this is in partnership with Hennepin County and Minneapolis Public Schools. Our Takeoff program is an after-school program that includes leadership building and hands-on learning. It also includes 4-H in club in partnership with the University of Minnesota and the Department of Public Safety. We also send groups of Somali girls to Yellowstone Park for outdoor experiences tailored to leadership building and college preparation. This is in partnership with Wilderness Inquiries. We also created the first ever Boy Scouts troop within the Somali community. Since its inception, Kajuk has been recognized for its successful work. The Somali elders have awarded Kajuk with the Somali American Community Appreciation Award, which led us to host the annual Somali Independence Day Festival that brings over 20,000 folks together. Kajuk has been recognized by Hennepin County Sheriff Stanek and Congressman Keith Ellison. Because of our success of engaging young people in the Twin Cities, the idea of Kajuk has been featured here in the United States and at national counterterrorism conferences, and used by an example by the international community to engage young people, most recently by the Canadian and the Kenyan government. Kajuk was also part of the delegation from Minnesota that went to the White House conference on countering violent extremism a few weeks back with the U.S. Attorney Andy Luger, Hennepin County Sheriff Stanek, and others. As a community at large, we know that radicalization or the recruitment of ISIS and al-Shabaab doesn't happen overnight. This is definitely a process. There are many underlying issues that cause the vulnerability of a fellow American to be radicalized, such as the lack of education, lack of mentorship and guidance, lack of employment, and isolation. In order to address these recruitment, Kajuk is at the forefront fighting this through the education, employment, and the arts. As part of our five-year strategic plan, Kajuk wishes to partner with the state, local organizations, and Somali communities around the state to offer youth employment opportunities where high population Somalis reside, including Brentsville, Eden Prairie, St. Cloud, Rochester, Wilmer, Farmington, and others. A major component of addressing the root cause of radicalization is jobs. These are absolutely essential in improving our community and ultimately improving Minnesota. By increasing and offering youth employment, this will ultimately help people in our community lift them out of poverty and give new opportunities to the next generation. Example of our program will depend on the community and its specific needs and dynamics. In some cases, Kajuk will partner with the workforce centers and other job skills organizations to train Somali youth and young adults for job opportunities. In other communities, we have found opportunities to work with local government to diversify its workforce, to improve its outreach to cultural communities, and address the oncoming wave of recruitments, the oncoming wave of retirements by coordinating local government internship opportunities with Kajuk. Ultimately, these culturally sensitive partnerships will provide Somali youth with an opportunity to gain valuable work experience, to be financially stable, and to learn skills that are needed to enter and advance on the 21st century workforce. The component of our program includes, but not limited to, career mentorship or internship, job search skills, resume writing, career mentoring, interviewing skills, workplace skills. I would like to thank Representative Peterson for her leadership and the advocacy with this bill. Mr. Chair and members, with your support, we can do some great work in Brentsville and other great places in our great state. Thank you for your time, and I urge you to support this bill.
Thank you very much. Any questions from the membership? Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm going to say what I say every time we go down this path. First, thank you so much for the work that you're doing in the community, because it is very important. And I, however, would ask you, have you taken your proposal to the Department of Economic Development and applied for one of their grants yet? That's my first question.
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you so much for the question. Good question. We have not done so yet, but we've had actually a meeting with DEETS last week, and they are putting together a program that we might be able to qualify.
Thank you. And that gets back to my point. What we've been trying to do over the last 6 or 8 years, and I'm going to take on Representative Dean when he comes down here too for the very same issue, is not do direct appropriations to groups that come before us, but direct all grants to the Department of Economic Development so that they can use the accountability measures we've been working so very hard to put in place over the last few years, so that we give our funds to the organizations that apply for grants. So I'm not supporting any of the bills that have come forward, and I love the project. So it's not at all about the bill and the project. It's simply about supporting accountability and the grant process we have in place. And I also, even though I won't be supporting the direct appropriation, I do want to say I think your ideas here and the work that you're doing, particularly with the internships and mentorships, and working with the university for 4-H. I'm a big 4-H and STEM fan myself, and my kids were 4-H members and absolutely loved it and learned a lot. So I think all the steps you're taking to work with the youth in your communities and in our communities is fabulous, and my hope is that you'll continue to work with DEET and get a grant. Thanks.
Mr. Chair, if I wouldn't mind responding, and I agree that normally the competitive grant process is maybe a preferred method. However, this is incredibly specialized, and there really is no other organization that does this type of work, and I think with the targeted population that we're really trying to reach, that is why, in order to save time and money, that's why we're doing an appropriation in this particular bill. However, I think the accountability component can certainly be incorporated into this as well.
Okay, Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I want to thank you for bringing this bill here. I want to say the work that you're doing is really good to engage young people around the arts and, you know, after-school program, even creating the first Boy Scout. This should be... I used to be a Girl Scout troop leader, so I think that's fantastic. And so maybe a couple of questions. Where did the amount come from first, I guess?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the amount of the amount
allocation
that you have for
fiscal year 2016.
That basically, that came from the amount of young people that we want to hire for the next 2 years. Basically, what you have laid out is that we're expanding, this is a pilot program that we're expanding to reach an X amount of young people across the state, not just in the Twin Cities. It also includes, you know, career training, workshops, and various different things.
Mr. Chair. Okay, and maybe that helped me a little bit. So you want to hire youth, because I look at you, you're pretty descriptive of what you want to do with the money.
Yes.
Train Somali youth and young adults for job training, offer internship with local government,
yes.
Offer workplace cultural awareness programs for local government. And I think those things are good, right? But what I also know, so what happens so often for communities of color is that we can train them, you can be educated, and sometimes you don't get the jobs, right? Mm-hmm. They're just not there for us in large numbers. And so, so what I kind of like heard you say is that we want to hire youth. We want to create jobs so that they are getting a job. You also want to be mentoring. I mean, but I don't see that here in statute that you would be hiring youth. And I don't know if that's a conflict from what you say to us in writing. You want to respond to that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative. So basically the amount will be used to provide internships for young people. For example, we'll be partnering with local entities to provide internships so that they're exposed with different careers. And the idea is that after they're done with their internships, that we can then, after that, help them find a career path as well at different areas. But the idea of this program is to provide internships for various different sectors of the industry.
Mr. Chair, so are you providing paid internships?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, because yes, that makes a difference too, right?
Yes, yep.
So we want to be really clear about what we're trying to get to create the opportunities that you want. right? I think that's really, really important because sometimes it just doesn't happen as we visualize it to be. Okay, you know, it's something that I'm going to sign on to. I support. I know what the disparities look at in the Somali community. I know the challenges are there to find a place in a home here in America and to be able to provide the opportunities and the resources and the mentorship and the educational tools that's needed to create better outcomes. So I will be signing on to this bill. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative.
Any other questions from the membership? Seeing none, how about the audience? Any questions there? Please come up and...
Yeah, I got something.
You can come up to the testifying table and give your name. Please give your name for the record.
My name is Lucas Balliette. I'm a member of Local 49. Hey, I've been working out here at this refinery here for about a year and a half now. About a third of the employees out there are all from the south, and I haven't noticed one Somalian out there working. All these trade unions, they have apprenticeships, the pipe fitters, the boiler makers, operators, laborers. Why aren't any of your people hitting up these halls and trying to get in these apprenticeships?
Thank you so much for the question. As a matter of fact, this is one of the reasons. There's a lack of education. There's all these resources around the community that a lot of people are not aware of. I would love to work with you to find, to create a platform where young people specifically are aware of these opportunities.
A minimum thing you need is a high school diploma, and you gotta be able to speak English clearly so we can understand each other. That's the biggest thing. And showing up every day.
I agree. I'm pretty sure that we can find a lot of young people that are not aware of this opportunity, and we can work with you to create that platform.
I mean, there's that whole stadium going on right there. There's all these building projects. You guys got to hit up the local. That's all I have right now.
Yeah. So, Mr. Chair, to the testifier,
yeah.
And that was one of my questions to him, is that often, you know, communities of color are not in high numbers part of those unions. We don't have those opportunities because there are others who may be sitting on the bench. There may be others who's more qualified. There may be a lot of reasons why opportunity does not come to those communities, our communities, in high numbers. I hear you. And I think his response was really legitimate, that, you know, he want to create a process where he can connect with you to have those opportunities, to create those opportunities so that they are intentionally happening, because they don't always intentionally happen.
Okay, here's the thing. Opportunity didn't come knocking at my door when I moved here from Michigan. I had to get out, and I had to fight to get in these trade unions, and it's hard. I don't care what you are. It's hard. But what I'm saying is there's so much work going on out there right now. At the, we'll use the refinery, for example. There's about 3,000 to 4,000 people out there every day working, 6 and 7 days a week, 10 and 12 and 14 hours a day, every day. And like I said, about a third of the people out there are from the south, because we can't find nobody around here. It's not a secret.
Yeah.
It's there.
Yeah.
And we'll put our locals to work before we put the southerners up here to work.
Well, Mr. Chair, I appreciate that. Us locals want to get to work, you know, and I know with a community like mine that's really diverse, is that the one thing I heard when I was out door knocking and talking to folks all the time, the one thing they say they wanted is jobs, you know. So I would agree it is hard, and it's really even more hard for whatever reasons, and we can speculate a lot of reasons why it's even harder for communities of color to get in those positions to have those jobs. Don't think that they want to sit at home and have somebody take care of them. That is not what they want. They want to go to work to take care of themselves and their families and provide and can be contributors to the state. They're asking for that. So I think this is a great opportunity and a great path to make that happen in a very intentional way, in a way that it just does not happen. Even though we want it to happen, it just doesn't create itself and happen.
You know, here's the thing about these apprenticeships. You don't pay for it.
But go ahead.
Yeah. All right, I'll finish up quick.
No.
All right. You don't pay for it, all right? It's already in the apprenticeship fund, and it's all covered. You got to get up, and you got to beat your feet, and you got to make it happen. You can't just sit here asking for money. Tell these people to get out there and start asking questions. I move here, I don't have no connections. I don't have any family. Okay, it's just me. And I had to bust my ass to make it happen. sitting here asking for money doesn't make it happen. You got to get up and you got to be ready to work 7 days a week, 14 hours a day. You just have to do that. A lot of people don't stick with it for that reason. But it's all there. The training, everything is there.
Very good message.
I'm done.
Thank you.
I got to go. My blood pressure's getting up.
Serious. No building grades, guys, that need higher blood
pressure. Chairman, to the testifiers, you know, I think as we go forward, you know, there's going to be a lot of baby boomers that are going to be retiring from our trade skills, heavy capital industry issues. You know, guys like Mahoney are going to be retiring, and it's going to be very important that we have all of Minnesota being involved in those items, because we just competitively we can't afford to have anyone sitting on the bench. And I agree with the testifier. I'd much rather give a job to someone from Minneapolis than Alabama. So it's I mean, I do think going forward here, we have to all understand that our supply of a qualified workforce is already begun to contract, and it's only going to get worse. And that ability to develop and have a workforce that is productive, that is skilled, it's going to affect our state's ability to compete going forward. And so it's not just an issue with the 49ers. It's not just Flint Hills. We're seeing this with all the construction trades. And at a high level, the more we can get our higher education system to be alignment with those apprenticeship programs, that's going to be a good thing. A lot of this is relationship building. It's not spending more money or new programs. It is establishing those relationships. My brother's a sprinkler fitter. Reason why he's a sprinkler fitter, I got five uncles who are sprinkler fitters. That's how we got into it. And so once we get those things happening, there's some secondary and tertiary benefits that are very helpful. So
I think appreciate that. Representative Mahoney, I'm sure glad you came back.
Yes, I wish I'd come back sooner. and I know this particular bill coming up, I had taken a look at it, and I know there's some good things in here. I take it the fellow was a 49er. I didn't catch his name. But it's not just in, and this is specifically geared towards the Somali community, and I think that's appropriate. We need to make sure that this particular community and essentially all communities have equal opportunity. But this is not only just trying to do a job skills, it's trying to make sure that we deal with the concern that is that we all share in keeping youth away from bad internet sites. I'll say it that way. And I think that's appropriate. As to whether it's the construction trades or any other place, Representative Garofalo really hit the nail on the head. We are looking at a 10 to 20% reduction in our workforce. And we will be in serious, serious trouble 10 years from now if we don't figure it out. And I'll probably get myself in trouble here, or at least my party in trouble, but you know where we have 20% of our youth are today? In our prisons. And you know what we did 10 years ago or 15 years ago? We took almost all of the job training out of our prisons. And we get people down with prison, and we don't give them the opportunity to reintegrate. So it is something I don't think we're going to look at it this year, but I think in the future going forward, we need to start looking at that also. So I support your bill, Representative Peterson, and hopefully we'll... I would have preferred it went through the competitive grant program, but I'm going to slide on that one right at the moment.
Okay. Seeing no other questions, I will renew my motion to have House File 1515 pass and be sent to Jobs. Ag Finance.
There you go. Ag Finance, yeah.
And with that, all in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Caveman, pass. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, members.
And we have one more bill, House File 1136. Stephen, you want to boot this over? you can't stutter now. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Appreciate your time today. I need a little help in moving the bill.
I would
ask that you'd move House File 1136 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Energy, Jobs, and Wisconsin Irritation.
Representative Green.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 1136 and recommend it be referred to Jobs.
Representative Dean, is that a tip to the other chair?
I have no idea. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Green. House File 1136 is a good bill, and it really highlights some very positive work by Twin Cities Rise. It's a great organization that is a performance-based organization, and we really the performance model is really one that I've always been focused on, and we'll have a discussion with Representative Norton about how that works in just a minute, but I want to just turn it over to Tom Streitz, the CEO of RISE, just to describe very, very briefly the bill, what it does, and then look forward to any questions.
Welcome to our committee. Give your name for the record.
Chair Governor Tom Streitz, President of Twin Cities RISE, and I'm under a 75-second rule imposed by Representative Dean. So thank you, Representative Dean, Chair Guthrie, and committee members. For the opportunity to appear before you today, my name is Tom Streitz, President of Twin Cities RISE. Twin Cities RISE has a 20-year history of assisting those with multiple barriers to employment, such as criminal history, which was referred to earlier, chemical dependency, train for and attain long-term employment with family-sustaining wages of $20,000 or more with benefits. We are a long-term intensive program that seeks to do more than just place an individual in any job, but rather focus is on long-term income change. The average wage of a participant coming into our program in 2014 was less than $5,000. The average wage upon successful completion of our program was over $26,000, a 500% increase, and that results in net benefits to the state of taxes, and I can go into that in detail. Our track record of results nationally and with the state of Minnesota is exceptional. We have a nation-leading 82% retention rate of employment after 1 year of employment for our graduates. The national average is 42%. So 82% are in those jobs a year later. We're a long-term program. We're an exceptional proven value to the taxpayer. Twin Cities RISE pioneered pay for performance with the state of Minnesota over 18 years ago. For 16 years under the Minnesota state statute for pay for performance contract, Twin Cities RISE returned $7 to the state of Minnesota for every dollar the state invested. Under our pay performance model, Twin Cities RISE takes all the risk and only asks to be paid if we succeed. Twin Cities RISE privately fundraises over 80% of our budget to take this risk, and that's tremendous leverage for the state and the taxpayers. Our proposition to this committee and to the state is simple. We have a proven track record of performance, partnership, and economic value to the taxpayer. Pay us only if we perform. We have in place in the state the first in the nation pay for performance statute. Let's continue to work together and get the long-term unemployed into good-paying jobs. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Norton.
We might as well just get there. Thank you. You have a wonderful organization, and I know you've done great work. And it was one of the, when I came to the Capitol and sat through my very first workforce committees, actually it was RISE that had one of the first ROI presentations and kind of was the impetus for some of the legislation that we actually did pass in accountability, because other groups could come here and did come here, and the Office of Economic Development and the organization themselves could not give me a return on investment and number or return on investment value for the state. And so through, as I talk about every time we talk about this, we put something in place. And I understand that you didn't get a grant 1 year, if I'm understanding the scenario.
Right.
And can you tell me what happened that year that you didn't get a grant?
Mr. Chair, Representative Norton, thank you for the question. Thank you for your past support. I appreciate it. That year, I wasn't around for that year, but so I'm reading through history and archaeology, but what I'm told is that when the new administration came in, there was a movement to kind of grant process, and I know Representative Mahoney was a champion of that. Mm-hmm. And in the writing of the grant process, my understanding of the rules were basically such as that it was apples to apples rather than apples, you know, apples to oranges, excuse me, rather than apples to apples. So there wasn't long-term pay for performance built into the competitive grant process. So it leads organizations such as ours out that make all the investment up front and take the long-term view of working with people to get them ready. That isn't accounted for in the current kind of the grant process. Now, I've had great conversations with Deed, mm-hmm. Jeremy Hansen-Willis, who's my former colleague. So great group of people over there. And we're very happy at the time that that grant process reflects long-term change, high wages, we're in, we'll compete with anybody.
Thank you, and I appreciate that answer because that's what I was going to get to. I, too, have talked with the department, and they have talked about the great collaboration and partnership that they've had with you, and that they, too, believe that it's possible to have you get back into a program and be part of the competitive grant process, which, again, is where I'm hoping you'll be and that we won't have to be going through this picking winners and losers at the table again. But thank you, and I do appreciate the work you've done. You do a great job.
Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just want to thank Representative Dean for bringing this bill forward. I think it's a good investment from the state of Minnesota. I think what you said, that for every dollar that we invest, it's a $7 return. And so, you know, I was just listening earlier to another bill for the Center of Rural Policies and Development. And I was reading some of the bullet points here and reading some of the work of RISE, that you have a long track record of working with individuals who have severe barriers to unemployment, you know, including background, you know, criminal background or chemical dependency or just being chronically unemployed. And it's, you know, kind of like my belief and belief of so many other people that when people are working and contributing to society, it just create, you know, for a better community and state. But I was looking at one of the bullet points here from the Center for Rural Policies and Development, and it talks about finding the rural voice. Rural Minnesota is losing its voice. And I would say so often, like this bill and the bill before, that, you know, some would say that there are many in the state who are increasingly left out and left behind, and their voices is not heard. And I think, you know, what these bill does is, you know, give these communities and individuals a voice, but it also make them more productive. It's just, you know, it put the onus on them to be contributing individuals to our society. And it takes the burden off of us as a state in the long run to be investing huge amount of dollars when they are being responsible for themselves and their family and their community, and it's not us doing it. And so anytime we can invest a dollar and get back $7 to create, even we can say, a huge surplus like the one that we have, that I am willing to see people paying their taxes and contributing to our state. So I just want to thank you and for the work that you do.
Chair Gunther and representatives, I'll just, there was a reference made earlier to people exiting prison. And one of the things Twin Cities RISE is doing right now, we are bringing our workforce skills training to Shakopee Women's Prison, and we're in Stillwater Prison as well. And what we're doing is preparing people so when they get out, they can get jobs. We're not a social service agency. Anybody who comes to us, we ask them to commit to themselves. If they commit to themselves, we'll work with them, we'll partner with them. So I think that was a great comment, and that's work we're doing now. Thank you.
Very well. Any other questions from members? Yeah, Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just was curious, other than Stillwater and Shakopee, is it generally this program just the metro, and maybe I just missed it? But
right now we're just in the metro area, but under our program it's called Reentry Connect. Right now our recidivism rate under that program is 16%. The national average is about 50%. We're seeing great results. I don't want to declare victory today, but the results so far are really, really good. We'd love to expand that program. Our federal grant runs out at the end of June.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Any questions the audience for or against this bill? Seeing none.
Mr. Chair, I just want to thank you for the opportunity to bring the bill forward for your committee. Thank your committee time. Appreciate that. I want to thank Representative Moran for working on this in the past and for her support. And to Representative Norton, I think this bill is one of, I share your concern with some of the accountability pieces. And this is a bill that's kind of the ultimate accountability because if it don't work, it don't cost nothing. And that is not a bad way to go. And if it were a waste of money, I would not put my name on it. So I appreciate your support of the committee and look forward to the work ahead. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I renew my motion to refer House File 1136 to Jobs.
Representative Green renews his motion to have House File 1136 passed. We sent the jobs. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Okay, motion passes. We are adjourned. That's whatever you want to say, I can get it.